Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on community radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together on this fine community radio station once a week to talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions.
And do we have opinions, Lana?
We do. So thanks for joining us. And here's a little bit about this fine radio station. We are currently in the middle of a fun drive. We can't do it without you. We are all in this together. So, Donna, what can people do if they want to help our fine radio station and become a member?
Keep Lana and I on the air here, right?
Oh, what a good
idea. It's easy to join. You can go to the website, khoifm.org, and press the donate button. Or you can use your smartphone to text. Here's the number to text. 515-200-7758. Or you can call us at a different number, 515-292-2878. And a friendly volunteer will take you through the steps to make your donation.
Yes, you could be part of this. This is community radio. We are not like regular radio. We are yours. We are yours. Yeah, they let us on the radio. That's one big difference here. We've been at this for quite a while, and we really enjoy ourselves. So sit back, relax, and enjoy
and get
our show.
Your information free from the pressures of corporate sponsorship.
Oh, that's well put, Donna.
Oh,
yes, it
oh,
is.
Boy. Oh, boy.
Today we're going to be considering the power of the earth this time of year.
Things are springing.
After the long winter of our discontent, all this, it's so good to see green things happening. We're going to be considering things growing around us, the prairies and the woods, everything is blooming. We're going to be considering motherwort, one of Donna's current favorite wild herbs. Motherwort,
yes
it is, and dandelions. Whether you love them or hate them, they are back, folks. I see some folks out there digging them up. And I see other folks that just let their lawns go to gold. It's a lovely thing to happen this time of year.
Well, and other people are out eating them.
They're very good for you.
They are. And the little leaves right now are actually quite delectable. I mean, put them in your salad. But, you know, find some that the dog hasn't peed on or something like that. But
wise advice.
Yes, but, you know, with rain like this, well, we're probably okay.
Very good. Anyway, I'd like to share a little thought about dandelions here. And here is a poem by Walt Whitman from his Leaves of Grass book. And this is his poem called The First Dandelion. Simple and fresh and fair from winter's close emerging, as if no artifice of fashion, business, politics had ever been. Forth from its sunny nook of sheltered grass, innocent, golden, calm as the dawn, the spring's first dandelion shows its trustful face. The First Dandelion by Walt Whitman. And here is another poem, actually another poem from the turn of the last century. This is from a poet named Helen Gray Cohn, and she was born in 1859, lived until 1934. Her poem talks about a army of dandelions, sort of an insurgency, sort of like an invasion of dandelions, and that's how they seem to this person.
I would prefer an invasion of dandelions to the Creeping Charlie army that I have.
There we go. So here's her poem on dandelions. Upon a showery night and still, without a sound of warning, a trooper band surprised the hill and held it until morning. We were not waked by bugle notes or cheer our dream invaded, and yet at dawn, their yellow coats on the green slopes paraded. We careless folk the deed forgot, till one day, idly walking, we marked upon the self-same spot a crowd of veterans talking. They shook their trembling heads and gray with pride and noiseless laughter when, well away, they flew away and ne'er were heard thereafter.
Ah,
so those dandelions, they turn into old men real quick, don't they? And then they blow away and then they come back for the next year.
Well, the other thing that we're all probably noticing a lot is the Cardinals are just singing to beat the band. Every morning at sunrise, I just, it's enough to wake me up and make me happy. And then I was recently reading why cardinals can be good for your health. Apparently, the mosquitoes that carry the dreaded West Nile virus feed on robins until about mid-July.
Oh, that's awful. They feed on robins.
I guess so. I thought the robins were feeding on the mosquitoes, but it must be a mutual thing. And it turns out that when the virus starts to become difficult and more rambunctious and harder on human beings is in mid-July. And for some reason in mid-July, those mosquitoes start feeding on the cardinals. Now, the cardinals and members of the cardinal family are what is known as a sink for the virus. Somehow they can bite the cardinals, and the cardinals do not transmit it. They don't respond to it, and it kind of goes away. So let's keep all our cardinals around and be joyful that we have so many. I mean, not only are they're beautiful, colorful, fun, noisy. I love the way they sing.
Yeah, do it, do it, do it.
Very good, Lana. All right.
You can get a male cardinal all upset this time of year by whistling that out in the yard. He'll whistle back. He really will. I learned that from my dad. You can do that.
Well, so those cardinals that we have so many of them are actually very good for us.
Very good. Very good. So lots of things going on this time of year. Joining us around our kitchen table today is a special guest. Donna, introduce our special guest today.
Yes, we have the other half of Onion Creek Farm, Lana's husband, Joe Lynch.
Welcome, everyone.
And I have to tell you some things about Joe besides being Lana's husband and a farmer.
A full-time job. Full-time jobs.
And he is quite the man about town. He is one of the founders and great supports of KHOI Radio. He built this wonderful studio that we're sitting in, and he is the president of the board. And his far-sighted encouragement of the community to build this radio station is one of the most wonderful things I know about Joe. But there are many others. So he's here to talk with us about what's going on in the woods in the spring, because he and Lana have a lot of woodlands on their property.
Great to be here. Before I launch into what I know about what's going on in Onion Creek Farm and our environs, I do want to say that as of August this year, KHOI will have been on the air 5 years, and we're planning Woo-hoo. Some great festival activities.
Big party. Oh, boy.
But we need your help in order to get to that point. Do your part. Text, call. Go to our website and be part of what we're doing here.
It's good to hear Joe say that, because Joe has more than done his part and continues to do so. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome, Donna. Onion Creek, the environs below our house, we're starting. This is the prime week for wildflowers. I am not a wildflower expert, but I know what grows on Onion Creek bottoms.
Just tell our listening audience, where exactly is Onion Creek? We have a farm called Onion Creek Farm, but there is an Onion Creek. So where is that?
You go north on North Dakota Avenue about a mile and turn right on Onion Creek Lane, and you follow the signs and you come to our backyard. And our backyard is a floodplain that is part of the Onion Creek floodplain.
Now, does Onion Creek then go into, like, the Skunk?
It goes into the Squaw Creek.
The Squaw Creek.
About a quarter mile down from our house. Uh-huh. It goes also up north about, 10 miles probably. Uh-huh. It's a lovely little place, and it's part of the Squaw Creek watershed, and they're active work in improving the water quality in the Squaw Creek watershed by a lot of people these days, and I'm quite encouraged that for the long term, its water quality is seriously improving here.
Do tell. Why do you think we're improving?
Well, people are paying attention, mostly. Farming practices are always issues that need discussion by not only farmers but the public in general, because there is so much farming that goes on in all over Iowa. But these discussions are taking place in ways that they didn't 10 years ago, and I'm quite encouraged by all that.
Well, it's good to be encouraged, I must say.
Back to wildflowers.
Oh, yes, it is the season. Go.
We have lots, and what's interesting is a forester friend of ours discovered a aerial photograph of the lower Onion Creek region from the 1930s, I'll have you know. And this bottomland had been grazed for 30s, the 40s, the 50s, and 60s for 50 years.
So we're not talking old-growth forest here.
No, we're not. But about 1970, the cattle were taken off, and since then, there was grass and a few scrub honey locust trees down there, and now it's fully forested, and the wildflowers have come back big time with no help from anybody I know, except that they were.
So you didn't go around dropping seeds.
Nope,
it just happened.
That's right. And
it regenerated all by itself.
It's been amazing to watch it take place over 35 years.
There's a term I've heard called, there's a seed bank, which is actually a lovely term. It's what the potential of the seed that actually can be in the ground for years and years and years, waiting for the right time.
The first 15 years that I was associated with this piece of property, there were no bluebells. Then there was one. Then there was five.
Oh.
Now there are thousands, and I'm not exaggerating. There really are thousands. 5 years ago, the first 30 years, there were no jack-in-the-pulpits. There was one. There was 10. Now there are dozens. 20 years ago, there was no wild ginger. And by the way, wild ginger has the most spectacular blossom you'll ever see.
Oh, wild ginger is. My dad told me that during the old farming days when they were, you know, out in large crews combining or whatever, you know, making hay, that my grandmother would take that wild ginger and soak it in water, and that's what they took out for all the field hands to drink.
I want to try it. It's real. It's beautiful stuff. It's a very low growing, I want to call it an herb, that has this beautiful, wide, lovely leaf. And if you turn up the leaf so you can look underneath it, you know, half inch off the ground, you see this spectacularly beautiful but subtle half inch diameter blossom that has a beautiful brown center, and it's just the loveliest thing you'll ever see.
Does it have an aroma to it? Does it smell?
The root does a little bit.
If you pull up the root of wild ginger and clean it off, do clean it off. Yes, it's gingery. It's not as strong as the kind of commercial ginger we have, but I could see the fact that you can flavor ginger with it.
Well, apparently it's been with us for a long time.
I've heard of people
candying it.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. I mean, it's a little, you know, size of your finger kind of root. And like Joe says, the flower is one of your more subtle flowers. You don't even see it when you're standing because it is.
You have to look for it.
It's underneath. It's a little bell. It's a little, wonderful, little complicated purple bell.
So we have Dutchman's Breeches and Trout Lily and Rue Anemone and Spring Beauties.
Are the Dutchman's Breeches, is it the tube? No, some of those have edible tubers, don't they?
Not to my knowledge, but I'm not an expert on this either.
I don't know. There's too much I don't know either. I got out there on Saturday and all I could find the nettles, and they're not very tall yet, so
no.
I have to come back and bring my gloves with me.
That's right. And do you like to eat nettles?
Oh, yeah.
Mm, how do you fix them?
Oh, boy, you can just make nettle tea.
Mm-hmm.
Nettles and dandelions are both very tonic and a wonderful thing. You know, they're like your spring tonic kind of thing. You can blanch the nettles and then kind of just lightly steam them and chop them up and do kind of the things you would do with spinach with them. Soups, they can go in pasta dishes. Mm-hmm. You can make a pesto out of them.
And the picky the sting that nettles have. That goes away when you cook it, I hope.
The second you throw them in boiling water, you know. So don't put your nettles in the salad, okay?
Yeah, right. Don't do that.
And no. Don't even – they really do sting. So don't touch them without a glove or, you know, or even a plastic bag over you, something.
I mean, the sting does go away, but it's not
fun.
Yeah,
but it's kind of itchy.
Yeah, but it's not fun.
No.
And there's something else I want to – two other things I want to mention quickly, and one is invasives.
Oh, boy.
Our property – European buckthorn, Japanese honeysuckle.
So what do you do about the honeysuckle?
Cut it down.
These are woody, and the buckthorn is also picky, but they're woody plants that maybe somebody planted them as an ornamental, but boy, do they take over
the woods. Are full of honeysuckle.
Good,
I mean, I don't
good.
Even...
Well, it depends on where you go, but they're worth... working on to eradicate if the best you can.
If you cut them back close to the root, is that what you do?
That's what I do. It takes a couple of times to do that. Mm-hmm. Some people use herbicides. I do not personally. Mm-hmm. But they're worth trying to get a handle on because they will take over. And there are places in the Story County in the East River Valley Park.
Oh, yeah.
Where the honeysuckle is really bad. So it's anybody who believes that this is not an issue, you haven't looked around.
I mean, they're not unpleasant, but what is it? Just they spread
too much
and take over everything?
And they chase out the locals, you know.
The other things that we might want to have.
That's right. Okay. They will spread and local underground
understory
stuff won't grow underneath them. And they can get pretty thick.
Yeah, I know all along the river because I go walking in town along the river. Right,
yeah, along
it's
the
every,
river, you
know, everywhere.
Something else I do want to mention quickly because I think people don't know this, and I certainly didn't know it. But as an example of how wonderful the wildlife habitat is in Iowa, most people think that because we have this reputation of everything's plowed up and put into agriculture. That actually isn't completely true.
Fortunately, there are places that are not suitable for that.
That's right. And if you go south of Des Moines, there's way more forest down there than most people believe, but it's all privately owned with a few exceptions.
Is it along the river?
Along the rivers, but other places as well. The Highlands, Madison County, anywhere south of Madison County.
Oh, right, Madison County.
There's way more.
Right.
There's the topography is hilly and...
Oh, in the south part of the
and
state,
there's,
right.
There's way more forest down there than most people think. All you have to do is fly over it in a small plane, and you'll be shocked at how many trees are down there. East of Centerville, Iowa, it's Sharon Bluff State Park. I want you to know here, and I just think this is such a beautiful thing for people to hear, is that first there's something called the kingnut hickory that grows in the bottomland forest there. And I had no idea, I mean, that there was such a hickory.
Is it different from the hickory that we have around?
The nuts are much bigger. And it's I suspect, fairly rare. And it's beautiful to know that there's not just one variety of hickory around. There's probably six or seven.
Well, hickory, they're so difficult to crack, boy, are they wonderful nut to eat.
But if this is not enough, like you're likely to see the ephemeral pools in the bottomland forest. If they have water in them.
Ephemeral pools?
That's right. That's what it says right here. In these pools, you may see fairy shrimp. Now, put your mind around that. They'll be swimming downstream in these pools. Leg movements help the fairy shrimp collect food from the water, such as algae, bacteria, protozoa, and floating detritus. So, Iowa was an amazing place, and there's lots of this kind of stuff.
What happens to the fairy shrimp when the pools go away?
I can't answer that.
To
find out. But
fairy shrimp.
That's right.
Doesn't that just sound like spring? Ephemeral pools full of backstroking fairy shrimp. This is Iowa. This is Iowa.
Poetic.
It is. So give us. There's contact information.
Where is that again?
Where is that?
It's contact. Look up. Google Iowa Prairie Network. On the Sheridan River near Centerville, Iowa.
Now, doesn't that just do your heart good and it makes you think about...
Fairy shrimp.
Yeah. Isn't that neat?
Well, and ephemeral pools. Oh, boy.
Downright poetic.
I
yes,
know.
It
We're
is.
So lucky to live
yes,
in this place.
Yes, it is. You are listening to KHOI. This is 89.1 FM. And you are also listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We are Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back to the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is KHOI Radio 89.1. Serving Ames, Story City, and the surrounding areas. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You hear us Tuesdays at noon, repeated Tuesdays at 7 p.m. And check out Donna Lana Kitchen on the KHOIFM.org website. Computer instead. So you've been listening to music by John Berquist and the Southside Swedes. Cool. John Berquist is a great accordion player. He plays all kinds of button accordions and beer. John Berquist is a former Ames resident, actually. He lived here a long time ago, end of the last century, in the 90s sometime, yes. You may have remember him. He had these wonderful accordions. He's a musician, a storyteller, collector of songs and stories, and a cultural geographer, he calls himself. Making music and collecting folk stories. He lived for the longest time in way, way up in northern Minnesota in the Iron Range where the Finns, the Swedes, the Czechs all got up there. They mined and they got together and played music, and he collected a lot of that music. There's a lot of life around us. Even if we live in an apartment or if we live in a city, we forget that the earth is just churning along underneath our feet. You may be getting some visitors in your house. Mice are starting to move in, at least into my house. I live on the edge of the woods, so, of course, they see that my house is a very nice place to move into. So trapping, removing mice, it's just part of the landscape. And I was having trouble with chipmunks, not in my house, but in my greenhouse. Chipmunks are lovely. They're really fun little things, but in your greenhouse, they love to dig things up, something fierce. And the traps that I had were not big enough for a chipmunk. They're a little hefty little guys. So I went online. Where do we find out anything? I found myself a chipmunk trap. So actually, this works really well on mice, too. So here's a quickie, non-toxic, you have it at home, chipmunk trap. Get yourself a 5-gallon bucket, fill it 3/4 full of water, prop a board from the ground up to the edge of this trap. You can see where this is going. Take a little bit of glue. Elmer's works fine. Put a few dots of glue along that little board. You're making a little plank for the little guys to walk. put some sunflower seeds at the bottom of the plank, glue a few little sunflower seeds up the plank. If you can balance some way at the top that's hanging over the edge of the water, do that. And sprinkle some sunflower seeds in the water. The sunflower seeds will float, go away overnight. I guarantee something will find that, find its way up the little plank and kerplop. You will have something. I do not wish to be morose here, but if you wish to get rid of chipmunks in your greenhouse, this does work. You can you can scoop little guy out later.
I guess they don't swim.
They do, but I'm afraid they don't swim enough.
Oh.
Online, KHOIFM.org. That's the website. You'll find out if there's not just our show on this. No, there are lots of shows, lots of locally produced shows.
And more coming all the time.
More coming all
We've
the time.
We've become well known in the community at this point, or at least known well enough
yes.
that people are coming in to do more programming.
People come and talk about their passion, whether it's music or food or politics or 8-track garage sale, 8-track tapes. I mean, you can find it all here. There's a show about pianos.
Right, the new piano music show.
Yeah, there's a show
really lovely.
There's a show called A Zen Buddhist Monk and a Professor Walk Into a Bar. Now, doesn't that just, I mean, it's kind of like fairy shrimp. That just kind of makes you... What a good thing to look up. Check that out. That's on Sunday.
That's a talk show.
That's the name of the show. And there's lots of good things here. This radio station has something for everybody.
So another thing that happens in spring is prairie burns. Joe has some experience with prairie burns. We did one at his house last year.
It's a spectacular thing to do if you've never been involved.
Oh, it's amazing.
You can go
play
to
with fire.
You can go to White Rock Conservancy. You can go to help with burns put on by the Story County Conservation folks. You can go and watch my neighbor. He burned his prairie here about 2 weeks ago. It's astonishing to watch it come back, too. It's a spectacular thing when it's black one day and 5 days later it started to be green again.
So talk about how it's decided when to burn, because you don't do it every year. You can't do it too frequently.
Well, I'm not an expert, but I
well, how often do you do yours?
Every 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, I'm sure there's a wide variety of thought on it. Some people probably do it every year, but I think
generally, and I suppose it depends on
conventional
the terrain.
Wisdom, a little bit, but not a lot. There are lots of places that could be in prairie that would benefit. My frequent fantasy is that if every landowner in Iowa committed a very small portion of their prairie, of their land to prairie, and connected it with the neighbor's prairie, that these connections would go all over the
trail
state
of prairie all
and
over.
It would change how we think of Iowa. It would really... It would look different from the air. It would look different to the butterflies. It would look different to the wildlife and the coyotes. It would be spectacularly beautiful. And it wouldn't take half of the state to do it. It would take 5%, 2%. But if everyone did it and connected them together, it would be pretty, pretty special.
So what's the benefit of doing a prairie burn? Why do you do it?
Well, the plants like it, as I understand it. It has a regenerative effect. The ash from the fires fertilizes the land mm-hmm. and the plants, and it's an ecosystem that is developed with prairie burning part of what goes on. If you've not read any of the accounts of the large scale prairie fires that existed prior to the 20th century, it's pretty something special.
Well, I once heard Wes Jackson of the Land Institute talk about, and he's out in Kansas where the big, big, big prairies are,
right?
Especially in the Flint Hills.
Right.
He was talking about this, and they will burn 1,000 acres
right.
at a time. And,
right.
and he was saying, maybe for that ecosystem, I think he said, some people burn every 2 or 3 years, but he thought down there maybe 5 years mm-hmm. was more appropriate. But mm-hmm. apparently it was used to be done by the Native Americans or lightning strikes or...
All of the above.
I mean, I can't imagine 1,000-acre prairie burn.
Well, that's small compared to what went on. If you read some of the accounts, this one of my most interesting books of late is called Old Jewels by... Who wrote it, Lana? Sanchez?
I don't know.
Mary? Was that
yes.
A, yes.
I'm not sure the last name is correct. But anyway, the accounts of prairie burns in the late 1800s, some were started by locals. Many were started by lightning. They're part of the ecosystem, animals have evolved in concert with these prairie burns.
So where do the animals go when there's a...
They get out of the way. That's the best I know.
Run into their little burrows?
No, they find places to go.
Donnie, you were talking before about what some of the benefits from a prairie burn, and one of them is that it makes room for other small things. You were talking about cleaning up your yard.
So the big
yeah.
tall things get taken...
Yeah. Well, and even just all the duff, all the old grass, all the thick stuff that is knocked over from last year. You were talking about cleaning up your yard. Should you leave it? Sure, you can leave it. It's great mulch, but that favors a certain kind of plant that
that's
can
right.
push up through. So, like the stuff that's coming back from the roots, that just will push up through, no problem. But let's say there's a prairie plant, an echinacea or something that wants to start things from seed. The seeds need sort of
a wider, more sun.
Seed bed.
Yeah.
A seed bed, they want to be able to touch the ground. They want to have the sun on top of them. And whether a buffalo herd came through and kicked away the stuff or whether things are burned, and it happens so fast.
Or both.
It makes room. It makes room for the next generation. A prairie burn is a good thing. And speaking of, again, I'm not an expert on prairie burn, but I have been part of them every now and then. And there's always this moment where there's this primal fear because when prairie burns, it burns hot. It burns ferociously.
Fast. Yeah.
And it burns loud.
The noise it makes
is amazing.
Yes, yes.
How do you control it?
Well, you pick the right day.
Yes,
when the wind is in the right direction and not too high but not too low.
You want wind.
You want a little bit of wind.
Yeah.
Because otherwise what happens is you get this conflagration, which the heat and the is not blown away by the wind, and it gets very intense.
So it has to travel a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you have fire breaks put up if you believe they're necessary to keep the prairie burn from going places where you don't want it. You start on the side upwind generally, and
that's not even intuitive, but you should.
You start it downwind and let it go upwind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because that way it controls itself.
Yeah,
and it burns into the wind.
And it's a group activity, right?
Often. Yeah.
It's a lot safer if it's a group activity. Get your friends out there with a good shovel and a good pair of shoes to stomp on any little bits that have
depends
bugs.
On the size.
Yeah.
My neighbor did a beautiful thing 15 years ago, planted a 90-foot wide, 1,000-foot long strip of prairie on a slope near our place, and it's been spectacular to watch it over the last 15 years. It's big enough to harbor insects and animals, and it's amazingly diverse, and it's taken shockingly little work to maintain it.
And how often does he burn that?
I think every 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but again, his is in the early stages, and different things grow at different times. You want to kind of also keep track of any kind of woody plants that get in there. Unless you want to turn into a savanna forest, that's fine too, but
that's a different situation.
It's a different thing altogether, yeah.
And you have to find species that will tolerate fire then, the oaks primarily and others.
So the book that Joe mentioned that has the descriptions of the old-time prairie burns are, it's called Old Jewels by Mari Sandoz, S-A-N-D-O-Z. And Joe, tell us, he's recommended this book to me, so I am going to be reading it. What's in the book?
Well, it's just a fascinating
pioneer picture, story, right?
Picture of life in the Nebraska Panhandle in the late 1800s. The way the settlers came through and moved on. The book is written by this man's daughter and her experience growing up in this guy's company.
This is not a Little House in the Prairie sort of story. This is like pretty raw and pretty hard scrabble living. Old Jules was not what you might call a really great leader of the family. He was quite a character.
Well, I would call him a leader, certainly, of his community.
Oh, of a community,
but,
yeah.
But his
hard,
family
hard
life
on
is
family.
Hard on family. And the descriptions are just really stunning to imagine. And it's so well written that you can imagine all this taking place. And I believe it's probably fairly accurate.
I would think so. I've started it, and I'm working on it. That's Old Jewels by Mari, M-A-R-I, Sandoz, S-A-N-D-O-Z. I'm pretty sure we have it at the library here.
Yes.
Very good. It's always nice to have books to read.
So what else is growing? What's edible that's growing right now?
What's
besides
edible?
Nettles and now, dandelions?
People have been talking, is it mushroom season yet? Is it mushroom? I haven't found any.
Some people have. But south of Des Moines, they're out.
See, the climate
earlier
is different.
Than we are.
The bioregion, the bio. Yeah.
So that means we'll have it shortly.
Oh, yes, this week.
And what are we looking for?
Well, I'm looking for morels because I can see those right away. There's other
Plus
stuff that happens.
They're so yummy.
Yeah, they'll be good. They'll be good. I tend to wait until the violets are a little bit more prolific, and then I can know. I have visited my places for the morels. I have. Yes, I have. I haven't seen a darn thing.
So the morels come. Well, it's kind of moist now, finally. Mm-hmm.
Don't forget the ramps.
Oh, don't forget the ramps. Joe said he has found some nice stands of ramps. Now, it's nice to live in a place called Onion Creek because the onion family is well represented out there. We have wild ramps. Not a lot of them, but wild ramps. And they're good for you, aren't they, Donna?
They are a culinary delicacy. You'll see them in all the white tablecloth restaurants. That and on the East Coast, fiddlehead ferns.
Oh.
Do we have those here? I don't think so. Is that's a New England thing, right?
I don't know. I'm not smart enough to know that. But
I don't know about fiddlehead.
But the ramp is, isn't it, the early version of a leek? Is that correct? Or is it related to a leek?
Well, it's the same family.
Right.
Chives, leeks, shallots, onions, those are all alliums. Alliums is the big family.
But they have really nice, broad leaves are about an inch wide, and they're just
spectacular.
This time of year, they are delicious.
They look like a lily coming up, sort of like that. And the leaf looks more succulent. Although it's not a fat leaf, it looks very green and very moist.
They're quite delicate. So, I mean, you can eat them raw, chopped in a salad, but they're lovely with just a light sauté on almost anything.
Mm-hmm. Right. You can dig up the whole thing, but don't take them all because they're slow growing. Put some back on the ground to grow for next year. You can dig them up, and yes, underneath there's a little tiny
bulb. Have a little bulb on the end of them.
Eat the whole thing, or you can just pick off the green tops, which work fine, too. We were discussing with Evan, our engineer, Don, and I, how do you tell? I mean, you come across the woods and you see this green thing. How do you tell? And I say, well, I taste it myself. You know.
I was doing that last weekend because I was kind of not seeing much more than nettles that I knew were edible.
You don't need to taste those.
No, I know what those are, yeah. Right. But so I kept thinking, now that looks like that might be a mustard, but I'm not really sure. Beautiful little kind of shiny leaf thing. And so I took a little bite. If you don't know what you're doing, you take very little bite, and you can always spit.
Yeah, right. You don't have to swallow, but trust your taste.
But what was it you were tasting?
It must have been mustard because it tasted mustard. I mean, do you have mustards up yet?
The garlic mustard's up.
We have the invasive garlic mustard.
Yeah.
Better be picking and eating that.
Well, there's lots of
pick
things.
Pick that till the cows come home, as
there's
they say, and still not get it all.
Yeah. But ramps are unmistakable if you take a little bite of that and you go, that tastes good.
Look them up on the internet, and they're very distinctive. Mm-hmm. You can't miss them.
It's called wild garlic mustard?
Oh, no, I'm talking about ramps.
Oh, I know, but what about the mustards? Yeah. Those I don't know.
It's a European invasive, as I remember, and it takes over. It's very disturbing. It came into our property from the so-called reactor woods across Onion Creek.
Oh, yeah.
And it's stuff seems to come and go. It's about a foot to 18 inches tall.
Well, not right now it's not, but yeah.
Well,
it grows fast.
The winter tends to kill it back. It's a biannual.
Oh, okay.
Is the way it works. And it seeds, and then the seeding is absolutely prolific beyond imagination. You know, one plant can just be unbelievable, and it can take over in a hurry. I've struggled with trying to keep it at bay, and I've finally given up because it just can't be.
You're going to have to run some pigs through those woods, Joe.
They need the ramps, too.
Some people have suggested fire for the woods, but it's pretty hard to maintain even a small ground cover fire in a shady place. So I've not tried that.
We'll just go in with a blowtorch, maybe.
I've tried that.
We learn to live. One thing about plants, they change. They're always a come and go, and they're in a battle out there. Some things do well, some things do not. It's wonderful to watch things grow this time of year.
I have a question. I don't remember as a child seeing anything but purple violets. Now, around here, we have a lot of white and purple violets.
And yellow.
That's true. I hadn't seen very many yellow, but so far, lots of
white. The vernacular name is dogtooth violet for some reason. I don't know.
For
the yellow ones.
So how did we get these color variants?
Don't know.
Immigrants. That's how. Immigrants.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They just flew in with birds and things.
Well, they're quite charming, but it's not in my childhood memory
bank. Well, enjoy them, Donna. You're listening to KHOI 89.1. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've been talking about wild foraging and finding things out there in the woods, not just to look at. There are really some things that we can eat. We should get to know some wild things. We should learn to eat from the wild. Can we really learn that skill?
Slowly.
We could.
Plant by plant.
On a past Donna Lana Kitchen show, Donna and I talked to author, forager, Ava Chin. Here's a bit of that interview recorded in the spring of 2015. Here on the Donna Lana Kitchen, we're going to take time today to look, take time to learn, and find out what is good to eat right outside our back door.
Well, we have a special guest. This is Ava Chin. The book is Eating Wildly, Foraging for Love, Life, and the Perfect Meal. Now, Eating Wildly, with a title like that, you know, of course, Lana and I had to have the book and get Ava onto the show. So lucky us. So,
She is a native of New York. She is the author, as we said, of Eating Wildly, a memoir about urban foraging. Her book catalogs the variety of edible and medicinal plants that she discovers in parks and backyards. She includes recipes and culinary information. Ava is an associate professor of creative nonfiction in journalism at CUNY and writes The Urban Forager, a column for the New York Times. Welcome to Ames, Ava.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
We wanted to start out saying that Lana was just in my backyard the other day, and I had just finished reading your book, which has a lot about motherwort.
Mm.
Just the name. We love the name motherwort, but I didn't realize that we were looking at my plants, and Lana goes, "You've got a lot of motherwort here." And I said, "Is that what I've been pulling out for the last 5 years?" And it keeps coming back everywhere. So now I've been drinking motherwort tea madly. Thank you very much. Tell us about motherwort.
Sure, absolutely. So I've written about it for the book.
I can read
a little section from it if
and
you
I
like.
And I have to say they're really pretty, too.
It's very pretty. It's a very distinct colored leaf. It's almost slightly fuzzy.
Yeah, and kind of ruffly, and it's just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It's a member of the mint family. It's got a square-shaped stem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of my favorite plants. When you first taste it, it can be extremely bitter. Right? But it's known as being a nervine, so it's like kind of calms your nerves.
Oh, just what we need.
That's right. That's right. So if, you know, you're kind of a high-strung type A personality, maybe you need a little bit of motherwort in your life.
Or if you're overly tired mother or grandmother.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So this is a section. I first discovered motherwort growing in the wild in Boulder, Colorado. I had gone on a foraging walk with their esteemed forager, Bridget Mars. I was so thrilled to actually see it in the wild. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs. "The leaves were shaped like a lion's tail, and I thought about the cowardly lion in The Wizard of Oz, combing the end of his tail between his paws. I rubbed a leaf between my fingers. The motherwort was less fuzzy than the common mallow and smelled like my grandfather's desk drawer, a repository for curios and odd mementos, pressed handkerchiefs embroidered with someone else's initials, buffalo nickels, an old extracted tooth. I'd first learned of Leonoris cardiaca from a Chinese doctor in Brooklyn who recommended it for women's issues like hormonal imbalances and spot bleeding. In Old English, wort means plant, and I loved the idea of a mothering plant that could aid my feminine issues and calm my nerves. According to David Hoffman's The Herbal Handbook, motherwort was used for menstrual conditions, as a relaxant during menopause, and as a tonic for the heart. Back then, I tried the herb in pill form and found it extremely dry and bitter. I had to drink an entire glass of water in order to get it down. Because of the taste, I had never taken it on a regular basis, and so couldn't confirm whether or not it worked. But here it was, alive and thriving in the middle of downtown Boulder. And apparently in your yard.
Yes, lots of it. Is it something I can dry also for?
Yes, but how I like to take it is to dry it first and then make a tincture out of it. So you kind of...
Alcohol, glycerin?
Alcohol.
Uh-huh.
A combination of, like, your highest proof alcohol you can get your hands on. For me, that's just a...
Oh, we have plenty of white lightning here in Iowa.
You can use that, mm-hmm, and a little bit of water. Mm-hmm. And you shake it. Shake it every day,
mm-hmm,
for about a month, and then you'll get a tincture. And it's a lot easier to my palate than to drink it as a tea because it is so bitter. So there's something nice about taking a shot of it.
It's not tasting bitter yet. Do you suppose it's because it's so young and fresh?
I don't know. I've had it pretty young. I found it pretty bitter. That maybe you're just you enjoy it so much.
I do. We've been pushing the bitters because that's the underdeveloped flavor of the American palate.
Right.
And also it's very helpful in aiding digestion.
Yes.
So. I do like bitters. Like, my favorite drink is Campari, which is very bitter.
Okay. Yes, yes. But for your listeners out there, it can be a very bitter herb. Mm-hmm. So if you don't like it as a tea, you can try it. Mm-hmm. Actually, you can sometimes get it in capsule forms in Chinese pharmacies and in health food stores. But if you're going to pick it in the wild, my suggestion is to dry it out and to turn it into a tincture.
Oh, but we've been talking about finding something in Donna's backyard here in the center of Iowa. You find things to forage in New York City. How in the world did you get started? New York City of all places. How did you get started doing
right.
this?
So for me, the foraging happened in two waves. Mm-hmm. I used to forage as a child. I was like one of those very curious city children that was always in the back courtyard pulling things out. And the first thing I ever pulled out was field garlic, also known as wild garlic or Allium vignale. Yes, it kind of looks like kind of grass gone haywire. Dairy farmers hate it because if the cows eat it, it turns their milk. But I love it. And particularly at this time of year, it's at its kind of freshest. And it grows throughout the winter time too. So if you're ever having a hankering for wild food, you can just go and pluck that out of your yard. But that was one of the first things that I would forage for as a kid. Then as an adult, I started foraging at a moment of crisis when I was losing my beloved grandmother, who was the woman who helped raise me. Mm-hmm. And I also ended a long-term relationship with someone that I thought I was going to get married to. And so foraging provided this kind of antidote to all the things that were going on in my life. Finding solace in nature, I just happened to be from the middle of a big metropolis, and it is a bit unusual, I agree, to be foraging there, but it's my hometown.
So that was Ava Chin talking about motherwort, which I have it has such beautiful little lacy leaves, and this time of the year, it's kind of coming up in little mounds all over the place, and it's very tender, and I don't think it's that bitter at all. I've been making cups of tea, just pluck it up, because I have a lot of it, and according to Ava, it is a tonic for the heart. That is a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's a pretty plant, and like she said, the word wort, W-R-T, at the end of a name of a plant, like there's mugwort, there's motherwort, there's St. John's wort, refers to herb or healing plant. So it's not wort as in the nasty thing that can grow on your finger. Wort is, this kind of wort is really good for you.
It means it has a medicinal use.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Let's see. I think I want to mention another little dandelion thought here. We started out with a couple of dandelion poems, and I'm going to leave you with a little, well, short little bit, a thought on dandelions from writer Toni Morrison. Nobody loves the head of a dandelion, maybe because they are so many, so strong, so soon. Wonderful to have such fecundity happening this time of year. We talked about dandelions and spring and stuff coming up in the garden.
Yeah, I did a little Easter cake and just went out in the yard and I decorated the cake with magnolias and tulips and motherwort and dandelions.
See? That's a good thing to put on top of a cake.
It was gorgeous. It didn't last long, but cakes are not supposed to last long.
They're not supposed to last long. That was a good Easter cake. It was a carrot cake, as I remember.
Oh, yes.
And you make one dandy carrot cake. So thanks for joining us. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. We've listened to the music of a Celtic folk band named Flook, F-L-O-O-K. And we'll go out with something called the Mouse Jigs. Oh, yes. Fine, fine things. The mouse jigs.
Those mice are pretty happy that it's spring, I think.
Oh, I bet.
Come out of the cellar and...
Oh, like rabbits and everything else, it's going to be lots of other mice soon. I just know it. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had Find Engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.